Who's up for talking nonsense?
Who's up for talking nonsense?
This is the American Jezebel.
And this is the Greasy Rapidian.
And we're talking nonsense. And it's been an illustrious beginning to this episode. Oof, okay. Yeah. Well, and the power might go out at any moment.
Yep.
It's been flickering.
Yep. We are suffering a 100-year snowstorm here.
Yep.
At the Talk of Nonsense headquarters in Dubuque, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Where are we? What's our hometown? I don't know.
It's not Kansas.
It is Kansas.
Yes. Just like this movie, we are in a wild storm. This one is a literal one instead of an emotional one.
This one is a literal one, not the emotional one that we endured last night.
Should we do some heavy-handed foreshadowing and say, let's all buy some, it's the year 2006, let's buy a house. That would be the equivalent of the foreshadowing that happens in this movie. We're going to be rich forever. Let's buy two houses.
Let's get a subprime mortgage on a house in 2007.
Yes.
Yeah. How about it?
That sounds great. What could go wrong?
We're rich.
Yay.
Anyway.
Wow. Already.
Yeah, if you're looking for a picker-upper or a little happiness, a little sunshine in your life, may we suggest another podcast?
Yes. What would we suggest?
Well, I have another one for later, but not right now.
As a picker-upper podcast?
The Dollop.
I was going to say The Dollop, but they're not really picker-uppers. They did have a great episode on Alice Roosevelt recently, though. Okay. Learned a lot about Alice Roosevelt. So go listen to the episode about Alice Roosevelt.
Okay. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is number 16, and we are going back in the vault for this one.
We're starting our new trilogy, and what a start to this trilogy. I think we had originally said we were going to do Rebel Without a Cause first.
Yep.
And then somehow it got switched up in our planning.
Yes.
I think that was a mistake.
I'm thinking it's not.
You think we're going to go up in quality as we go through the trilogy?
Well, we are not definitely not going down.
I mean, we can't go down in quality, but you think we're on an upward trajectory after this one?
I think we are.
Okay. We have to be.
I do. Yeah. And so this was Splendor in the Grass, the 1961 Academy Award winning nominated.
It did win for Best Original Screenplay.
It did.
Wow, this movie, yes, it is an Academy, and Natalie Wood nominated for Best Actress in this movie.
Okay, so we watched this movie, but before we watched The American Jezebel?
Yes, neither of us had seen this movie before.
So we both, shout out to Amber Ruffin.
Amber.
Might be the best part of this whole podcast right now.
It
Amber!
Really is.
Some people were like, what? And I was like, what?
If you need a picker-upper, go just watch a bunch of Amber Says What. Even if you've seen them, even if they're old ones from like a year ago,
they hold
still
up.
Good.
Hold
still
up.
Great.
Absolutely.
Yes. In the midst of this storm of the century, Amber Ruffin is the sunshine we need.
So Amber, make the alarm clock already.
Oh my God. Amber, call us about this idea. It's $1 million.
Yeah. And speaking of calling, Joel Courtney, we have not given up on you either.
We have not.
Call us. If there's a remake of Splendor in Your Grass.
You are the Warren Beatty. Beatty of 2019, Joel
you
Courtney. And introducing Joel Courtney, the Warren Beatty of 2018.
Seriously, if you start a GoFundMe for a remake of Splendor in the Grass, starting yourself.
They're remaking West Side Story, you know. Now I think it's time. Remake Splendor in the Grass.
What didn't Zach Braff, didn't he GoFundMe a movie?
He did, and it was not good.
No, but I'm just saying, if he could do
Zach. Your work on Scrubs was great.
Great.
Your original work.
Yeah, classic Zach is great.
Yes, it is. It really is. But
okay, but I'm just saying, Joel Courtney, you go fund me a remake of Splendor in the Grass starring you, who would we cast as the female?
Who is the Natalie Wood of today?
Who is the Natalie Wood of our time?
Well, it has to be, because Natalie Wood was a washed-up child actor at this point in her career, and this revitalized her career. Who is a young, washed-up child actor that's not trying to open a club in Mykonos?
She's too old. She's too old to play a high school senior.
I think my age, but looks 45, too. So I don't think she's literally too old, but I think she looks, she could be the mom.
She's the female Mickey Rourke.
Yeah, she really is.
Yeah.
Who is the washed up child actor that could revitalize her career that has an innocent sweetness to her?
I don't
her?
Know. I don't watch I don't know either. Any child actors.
I'm not, I don't know who are child actors of today.
So somebody can, you know, go fund me. They can jump in on the Joel Courtney project. So anyway, which reminds me of...
This is a moment for readers and for our readers of this podcast us know.
What's that one comedian's... That had the story about Mariah Carey's birthday party.
Oh, Jim Jeffries.
Jim Jeffries, yeah.
Yes.
Warren Beatty's, here's my card. I'm interested in your project.
Yes.
I think Warren Beatty might be interested to play the father.
That's true. Warren Beatty could be the oil, Texas oil dad.
Or
even though
even
he's not
better
from Texas,
yet,
the Kansas oil dad.
He could be Dell.
Dell. You think Warren Beatty would be Dell?
He would be.
Maybe the therapist. The terrible therapist.
Dr. Smiley.
Oh, Warren Beatty could definitely play with Dr. Smiley in the remake.
Get a hold of Joel.
Yeah.
You guys need to make this happen.
Warren would call us. He'd give us his card.
You need to make this happen.
Yeah. Oh, this would be great.
It would be fabulous.
And Joel Courtney looks more like he's in high school than Warren Beatty did in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. There were some serious problems with that.
Well, yeah.
Because even though Natalie Woods was a washed-up child actor... She still looked like she was in her late 20s in this.
She did, yeah. Okay. She did not look like a high school junior. Who knows? Anyway.
Since
neither of us had seen this movie, we made some predictions coming back around to Amber Ruffin.
Yep. So, shall we? The American Jezebel and the Greasy Rapidian say...
What
is this movie about?
Right, we're making our predictions.
Greasy Rapidian's gonna say, "What is this movie about?"
What is this movie about?
Mm-hmm.
Do you have your predictions?
Well, last
because
time
neither of us has seen this movie.
Neither of us have seen it. Last time you told me that this was about a strict parents, religious parents, not allowing their child to engage in romantic endeavors or romantic affairs with another person. So
yes.
I'm guessing that the parents belong to Natalie Woods.
Okay.
And that Warren Beatty is the guy coming through town, new guy in town.
Mm.
So he comes into town and he's not a religious guy. He's an upright guy, but not religious. And so initially they're kind of not cold to him, but not warm. And then when she falls in love with him, then they become very cold to him. And they rally the town around. And at one point he takes her driving in his car and they lay out in the pasture. And she tells him about all of her big dreams. And he supports her big dreams, and he encourages them, and they lay in the grass together. But they can never be together, because they're from two different worlds.
Mm. See, I think it's going to be about... Because all I do know to be true about this movie, yes, is that it's about Natalie Wood and Warren Beatty. I think it's Warren Beatty's first big role. And they're super in love with each other, but they live in a small town. I'm going to say it's going to be in like Nebraska or Kansas. And they live in a small, and I think that it's less the parents are religious. I think that it's more like society. So I think they live in a small religious town, almost like the town from, what's the Kevin Bacon?
Footloose.
Footloose. I think they live in like a Footloose style town where like the parents are influenced by, it's not that the parents are the real like drivers of this. I think that like there's an encroaching culture and like it's like society, man. That's keeping them from realizing their passion for each other.
And what happens in the
end? And I think that they're ultimately going to have very unfulfilling relationships down the line. And then at some point they're going to show up and they're going to be like older and they're going to realize like how much they let the expectations of other people and of their like repressive society dictate their lives. And it led them down these like less than satisfactory and it's going to be very like nostalgic. And kind of bittersweet at the end.
Mm.
That's my prediction.
That's a pretty good one. So just to be different and to throw it out there, I think the ending is going to be that they're gonna realize they can't be together. There's gonna be kind of a sad, so long farewell. Mm-hmm. He's gonna hug her and he's gonna walk out through the picket fence gate, get in his car, and he's gonna start driving it to the edge of town, and he's gonna go, oh, I think I should just go back. And he's going to turn around, and when he goes back, she's going to be standing there outside of her yard with her suitcase. She's going to jump in the car with him, and they're going to drive off together.
I kind of hope that's the end now.
So either way, nailed it.
Yeah, you know, between the two of us, we really nailed the entire premise of this movie.
I think you're right. Like, if you put together our two predictions,
yeah,
it's perfect. Totally what this movie is.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's not what the movie is. So who is this podcast unfortunately sponsored by?
Oh, yeah. Who is this one sponsored by?
This one is sponsored by necklaces.
What are necklaces? Just necklaces as a category?
Well, necklaces is a product, and so if you saw this movie in the cinema in 1961, you are probably wanting a pair of necklaces. Necklaces are a set of glasses that look like a necklace. So like a woman's, like, kind of large pendant necklace, and you pull it apart and you put them on, and they're glasses. They're quite remarkable. I might even wear one, you know?
Are there a couple different styles that you could go with?
Well, I have not shopped a lot about them. I only recently discovered them and was enamored with them on a site called Grommet, which is a site that sells all kinds of locally made, invented products, including expandable vases. So if you have more flowers than you thought, you just expand the vase. Love that idea.
That is a great idea.
An app for your phone that tells you how much propane you have in your propane tank. So if you're barbecuing, you can go, let's check the propane, honey, before we barbecue.
Wow.
And it shows a little picture of a propane tank, plus how much propane you have. Loving the app. So all kinds of things like that, where people are creating crazy things.
Huh.
So Grommet. Visit the Grommet site, and you can find your necklaces there. So, and we're sponsored by necklaces today.
new future sponsor for the podcast.
New future sponsor. Yeah, thank you, necklaces.
And a great one for anyone who, again, might have actually seen this movie in theaters.
Yep. Okay, let me tell you.
Tell me what this movie was about.
Let me tell you what that movie was about. A fragile Kansas girl's love for a handsome young man from the town's most powerful family drives her to heartbreak and madness.
Oh, I'm already mad just for listening to the description. I'm already mad about it.
I wanted to add on. I'm just going to say, when I wrote this down, I almost added at the end, dot, 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 and us too. Because it drove me to madness and heartbreak.
Oh my God, I'm just mad listening to that description. Ugh. Okay, so she was a very fragile girl because one boy breaking up with her in high school drove her to utter madness.
Correct.
Theatrical madness in a boiling bathtub.
Her mom put her in a scalding hot bath. There was some bad parenting, I'm just telling you.
She dunked her face in. This is bad parenting, the movie. I came up with alternate titles because I was so mad. I just started writing down alternate titles while we were watching the movie. It was called Foreshadowing in all caps, the movie. Also called Toxic Masculinity, the movie. And also called Bad Parenting, the movie. And also called, and this is the longest title, Don't Jump in the Lake for Your Dumb High School Boyfriend, the movie.
Oh.
That was my other alternate title.
Came up with one alternate title.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were doing this, but when I woke up this morning, I was like, okay, politically incorrect, I would call this movie She Asked for It. Because that was another kind of running theme of this movie.
Oh, my God. Ugh. Okay, so there were some very clear themes of this movie.
Okay, we're not going to recount this whole movie because this movie can be...
It was 2 hours long. This felt almost as long as Mr. Holland's Opus, which says a lot. Not quite as long, but almost as long as Mr. Holland's Opus. And it was a full half hour shorter.
Okay, well, it felt as long. I would agree with that.
Okay.
At one point, we clicked to see how much was left, and there was still an hour, and we were like, an hour?
This is like a how did this get made scenario, because they always check, and they're always like, I'm only 10 minutes into this movie.
I'm telling you, after 3 minutes... I was done with this movie.
Oh,
this...
I did say last night, do we have to watch the whole movie?
Yes.
And we did. Readers, we did watch the entire 2 hours.
I know. We sacrifice for you, dear readers.
I feel bad for the readers of this podcast too, because man, we made them watch a couple in a row. Okay, so we're not going to recount the entire plot of this movie.
I'm going to wrap it up.
Also incomprehensible.
I'm going to see if I can wrap it up in less than a minute.
Okay.
Okay, boy and girl, high school sweetheart. He mm-hmm. wants to have sex with her, mm-hmm. but he doesn't want to because that will spoil her. She wants to have sex with him, but she doesn't want to become that kind of girl. Her parents will throw her at him to get the rich guy. Mm-hmm. His parents don't want him to marry the poor girl, and they're going to send him off to Yale. This creates unbelievable sexual tension that leads to both of their emotional collapses that they never recover from.
Yep.
The end.
The end.
Just do the deed and get it over with. I don't care if it's 28. People were still fornicating in 28.
Yeah. Although, according to this movie, if you did fornicate in 1928 and you were not married, then you are deserved to be assaulted by a group of creepy, or you just get passed around the high school, because if you sleep with one person, then suddenly you're up for grabs for absolutely everybody, and somehow like you're also okay. Like that was that poor Juanita,
she was okay with it until...
But she also was such Deanie a, like, a she was also a fragile person, but then also, like, seemed to switch character entirely and then became, like, this vamp halfway through. But at the beginning, she wasn't. She was, like, she was idolizing the knights of the round table who treated women with respect.
And put them on a pedestal.
Yeah. And then turned into this vamp at the end. So if you did fornicate in 1928, then you were a bad girl who then deserved anything terrible that ever happened to you, and no one respected you.
Yeah. And as a side note, what happened to you? Oh, you died in a car wreck.
Yeah.
That's how we hear the trajectory of your character. If you're a sleep-around girl, we might in passing mention your tragic death.
Your gossipy mom might just mention that you just died in a car wreck. Oh, you were going to die that way? And then nobody's surprised.
There were so many, like the dancing girl where he's like, she's as pretty as Deanie. She looks just like her. And then she shows up in his hotel room.
Yeah. And then we just cut away.
And then we cut away and he's sleeping alone in his hotel room. No idea what happened.
Nope.
But I can only assume she was killed in a car wreck.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Because she's sleeping around.
Yeah. So all the girls in this movie who actually do have sex then die in car wrecks because they deserve to die.
They deserve to die.
Yeah. But the ones who don't have sex deserve to go crazy from it and get committed to an institution for 2.5 years.
2.5 years.
So, yeah. A movie full of terrible parents.
Terrible parents.
Who give terrible advice.
And do terrible things.
Do terrible things. Who never listen to their children. Just tell them to drink milk all the time and go to Yale. Because Trope Watch. There was some trope watching in this 1960s movie. They went to prom. And terrible things happen at the prom.
Terrible things happen.
Because who hasn't tried to jump off a bridge at prom?
Well, that's after you ask your ex-boyfriend to give it to you, and then he doesn't, so then you go out with the boy that took you to the dance, and then he tries to get you.
And then you are crying in super distress, and he's like, ooh, great opportunity to have sex with this girl who's sobbing in my car.
And obviously mentally unstable at this point. And then you fight him off and jump in the lake, and guys belly flop into the water.
honestly the funniest moment of the movie was how bad that one
easily
guy was.
The best and moment of the movie.
He may be the star by far.
That and when they drove the car into the farm at the end and they went through those gigantic pits and all of them suffered internal organ damage because the car just about came apart. The two parts of the movie that were worth watching. The belly plop
do you think
into
that
the
they drove. Were there like extras who had to do that stunt?
Wait, do it again.
Did they have stuntmen who had to do that?
I'm pretty sure.
There's no way Natalie Wood was in that car when they did that shot.
Oh, anyway.
Oh, two terrible great stunts.
So those were the two best parts of the movie.
Yeah.
The belly flop and the car going through a gigantic.
But Trope Watch, there were...
Washboards.
Trope Watch, there was a prom, and important things did happen at the prom. And then, even in the world of this movie in 1961, there were only two colleges in America. And this one only won, Yale.
No, there's two. He wanted to go to Ag College.
Oh, he did want to go to Agricultural College.
So there were two. So it's basically the same thing. You can go to UC Santa Barbara, dude.
Yes.
Or NYU. You know, or whatever. I can't remember.
Yep, Columbia, NYU.
Yeah.
Okay. So
let's just wrap up the talk about the movie, and let's do some other stuff on this podcast. This is going to be some serious nonsense. So he went to Yale.
Yes.
And he was like this super athlete. He was a football star, basketball star. He collapsed belly flop style. There were multiple belly flops. That could be another name.
Actually, I know why I've already rated this movie, and I was trying to elevate it above other movies we have reviewed.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the physical comedy of this movie, the unintentional physical comedy of this movie, was better than the intentional physical comedy of another movie.
Yeah. I think it should have a subtitle, a subtitle. Splendor in the Grass, the belly flop. Because they belly flopped into beds, both she and he.
They
belly flopped at the court. The dad belly flopped out of the window when the stock market crashed. They belly flopped into the water. There was some serious belly flopping.
And then he ran into a pole and belly flopped on the basketball court. Yeah.
So, anyway.
So, he's a big football star, and his dad's obsessed with what a runner
star.
That he is, because his dad fell off an oil rig, and so he can't run anymore, and oh, look, he's like a tragic masculine figure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The cripple.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, he's invested all his hopes and dreams in his son.
Yes. And so then his son goes off to Yale, and I'm sure that his son does not go to play football at Yale. He was probably... recruited by the football coach.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Even they just old timey photoshopped his head where they just cut the picture out and taped it on.
They did. They just went into her bedroom and took one of the pictures off the mirror and put it on the head of Newt Rockne.
My God. Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I'm sure when he went to college, he played.
What is the sport of all college bros?
I think I believe that it was invented in the 1400s, so probably about the time that universities came into being.
Really? You think old-timey Oxford boys?
Yes.
The old Oxford
I
bros?
I did a little research. I did some research for this episode, and cornhole was invented in Germany in the 1400s.
Oh, in Germany?
In Germany, so maybe...
okay, sorry, I was doing the wrong bros. They were the German bros.
Yeah. Yeah, this is good.
Yeah.
Throw the beanbag at the hole. So I can't even think of a university, but any of those, Leipzig or whatever.
Yeah, you think Martin Luther was playing some cornhole back
in
the day?
He was nailing it. It was the 99th.
That's how he got so good at nailing the theses on the door.
Yeah.
Yep. It's because of all the practice with cornhole.
Mm-hmm. Bam. Okay, so I am a huge fan of the AC... the American Cornhole Organization. I think it's ACO.
Hmm, okay.
American Cornhole Organization. And I'd just like to point out, if you go on their site, this might give you a clue.
They can't be the ACA.
They can't be the ACA. ACLU. Can't be any of those.
No.
So they're the ACO, which comes to our first podcast shout out. You can listen to Taco.
Taco?
Taco American Cornhole Association.
Really? Is that what it's called?
It's called Taco.
That's amazing.
They have almost 100 episodes.
We should have a crossover.
We should.
That would be great. Talking nonsense and Taco.
And Taco. Talking American Cornhole.
Talking American Cornhole.
And they say, hey, hole heads, welcome to Taco. Yep.
So you're now a listener to Taco?
I've listened to two episodes. They're only 8 minutes long. It's pretty good.
That's solid. We should.
Solid.
Yeah.
But if you want a shirt, they come in small to extra large. That's one size. And then 2XL, 3XL, 4XL, and 5XL. Just in case you were curious what a cornholer looks like.
Wow.
So you are either XL and under, or you then choose your XLs.
You know, well, usually isn't it like extra small through extra large is like the range of sizes that they'll give, and maybe XXL. So I think that that's just cornholer.
To go to 5XL?
Taco is very inclusive in their sizing.
5XL.
Yeah, they're really inclusive in their sizing.
All right. Well, I looked up some of the players.
Talking nonsense should take a...
And one guy listed his height and weight. He's 6 foot tall, 130 pounds.
Yeah.
What size is he wearing?
5XL.
No way.
You wear it as sort of a tunic.
It's going to be a muumuu.
It's what Martin Luther was wearing. Yeah, you wear a cornhole muumuu.
Okay, I guess
Yeah, because that's what Martin Luther used to wear
when
he was cornholing.
Okay, but I'm loving cornhole. It's way more complicated than I thought it was.
Really?
Yep, sometimes they lay up in front of the hole, and then you have to airmail it over the other one. Or they're so good, they put spin on it. And so they can spin it so they can curve it either way, you know, like a golfer.
Yeah.
You know, they're slicing it or they're drawing it. And so they curve around the bag that's laying they're kind of interfering.
Yeah.
It's pretty impressive.
And can they do the ones where they hit the one and it knocks them both
Absolutely
in?
They do that.
Because it seems like if there's one in the way, they could just like...
Well, they don't want to hit the other ones in.
Oh, but it's somebody else's.
Yes.
Oh, right, yep. Right. Yep. Okay. So they have all kinds of tricks to get over. Yes, because I have, you'll be shocked to know, rarely played cornhole.
It was quite amazing. And cornhole has three sponsors, official sponsors. One of them is like some self-help guy that is a sports self-help guy.
Hmm.
He's one of their sponsors. And then the other one's called like Wave Hole or something like that, where the board is rippled. And so it's not a flat board anymore. Changing the face of cornhole,
wow.
It says. Yeah, because now you have to go over
Has
it.
Has this just totally disrupted the cornhole world? What did Taco say about
I've
it?
I've not heard any feedback on the Wave Hole. Wave Hole or something. I can't remember what it's called. Mm. And then the last sponsor is Red Roof Inn.
Red Roof Inn is a sponsor?
15% off if you go to a cornhole. Okay, the other thing I love about cornhole, anybody can compete against anybody. So, you know, women against men, young people against older people.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, you know, they have
nice.
Divisions, but anybody. So I think in the last one, the Dollywood Invitational or something like that. Yeah. 5,000 people showed up for it.
Wow.
Yeah. With a total purse of $7,500. The winner took away $750. The winning...
$750.
Correct.
Okay.
So it is monetized.
Yes, but very, very low monetization.
That's the winner.
Yeah.
Second was $500. Third was
$250. That's probably even less than the axe throwers.
The axe was like $1,200.
Yeah,
they won.
Yeah, they won. And an axe, right?
And an axe, yeah.
So I think, yeah, it's less monetized than axe throwing.
Yeah. But axe throwing did not have a podcast. Anyway, so a 13-year-old came in fourth this year.
Wow.
I'm liking that.
I like that too.
Yeah.
Get that kid into competitive cornholing so he can get into college.
Well, professional miniature golf is the same way. There's some young people that are just crushing it.
Mm.
So I like that about professional, miniature golf, and we're not plugging that one today.
So because in cornhole you could have the first place champions in their 30s and the second place champions in their 70s and the third place champions 13.
Yep, and one of them's a woman.
Nice. That it's not a sport that's super specific to your certain physique at a certain time of age and a certain certain sex or gender. Huh?
As a matter of fact, I have the 10 reasons cornhole is a great sport for anyone right here.
Wow, you're really evangelizing cornhole.
The American Cornhole Organization.
Okay, I'm ready
Number
to hear
one,
about it.
Number one, easy to play.
Okay.
Number two, fast. Average game takes 15 minutes.
Hmm.
I like that. Not quite as fast as Boto Oshi.
Yeah.
90 seconds.
But also your clothes don't get torn at the end.
And you're not
injured.
You
haven't been elbowed in the face.
You have not been stripped naked and had your nose broken. Number three, portable.
Huh?
Number four, maintain mental and physical fitness. I'm not sure that's been scientifically verified.
Mental fitness through cornhole?
I know. You got to keep track of the points.
No, I don't know. Was Natalie Wood playing cornhole in the institution?
She absolutely had to have been. Social, number five.
True.
Six, fun. Seven, competitive. Eight, male and female can compete together or separately.
Huh.
Nine, singles, doubles, and team play. And 10, cross-generational.
Those are, I you know, what more could you ask for? You can get the t-shirt in every size, and it's for all ages and all types of people can play. And it's social and fun, and it's good for your mental health.
Yep. And so we're asking our readers this week to shout us out, to either call on our number, to tweet, to email. So if you're a cornhole player, call us.
Let us
write
know.
Write us. Yeah. Let us know. And
I have to admit, you know, I have always been a little bit prejudiced against cornhole.
Yeah.
And I think I need to revisit that, because my experience of cornhole has been that it was the exclusive purview of the bros of the type I would not necessarily love to hang out with.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I may have prejudged cornhole.
Yeah, I think you may have.
I think, like Elizabeth Bennet, I need to rethink about how I judge, how I have judged cornhole, and come around to it and realize that I love it.
Yep, go back to its roots.
Yes.
Yeah.
Martin Luther and a Moomoo in 1450.
Whatever they call them, the originalists or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going to be an originalist. So.
I am a cornhole originalist.
Yeah. What would the founding fathers of cornhole have said?
Maybe, I mean, who knows? If now that we know it was invented so long, I bet Thomas Jefferson was out in Paris and in the 1700s.
He was totally a cornholer.
He was such a bro. He would have cornholed.
Yeah.
Is that
and
the
it comes
verb?
From the South.
Do you cornhole? To cornhole?
Well, you know, I'm not an expert on it, so maybe some other people. But there's other names for it. Louisiana Toss. I don't know. There's all kinds of names
okay.
for it.
Okay.
But
well,
it's
I'm
a Southern
saying,
game.
I'm just saying, I have prejudged cornhole, and I think I think it has merits that I didn't recognize before.
Yeah. I think I, too, have scoffed at cornhole until I saw the Pro-Am Invitational, and I was amazed at the fun. I mean, they were razzing each other during it.
Aww.
Yeah, it was super fun.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay. Other thing we want the readers to write in about, if you like this movie.
Yes, to come back around a little bit to this movie, but really for the last two, because they're very different films, and we did not really like either of them. So I am honestly interested. We had a Debbie who responded to our criticisms of American Beauty with a defense of why they enjoy American Beauty or why they think it's a good film. And so we actually do want to hear from our readers. Did you like either Love, Simon or Splendor in the Grass? And why? Why did you like these movies? Again, we'll probably agree to disagree, but I honestly do want to hear from people who did like these and why they actually did like them. So you can email us at AmericanJezebel.GreasyRapidian@gmail.com. You can tweet at us at AmericanJezebel. Bruce Almighty Fan 420, our original follower. And then you could also, I'll post something on Instagram and you can comment on Instagram. Or is there another way to get?
No, we don't. I can't remember our phone number.
We need to come up with our phone number.
We eventually. Have a phone number.
We do have a phone number. We don't remember what it was. It's written down somewhere.
In
we can
our
find
20
it.
Seconds of preparation, we did not review
our phone
number.
We did not look up our phone number. No. But it's probably easier if you email, tweet, or comment on our Instagram post about this movie. So let us know. Why did you like this one or Love, Simon? We want to know.
We do desperately want to know because
this was a rough watch.
This was a rough watch. Okay, so can we even say anything about this movie?
I mean, Natalie Wood was nominated for Best Actress for this movie, and I found her to be unbearable in it.
Okay,
nobody had any person. Like, why did they love each other? Besides the fact that they were teenagers who were attracted to each other and he was rich and she was pretty, you know, and he was pretty, like, besides them being pretty and young people, what did they like about each other? They never have any conversations that aren't about, are we having sex? We're not having sex. Oh, do you like this other? You're looking at this other girl. That there was no other just conversations where they were like talking about their interests.
No, I mean, in the end, he marries the pizza making girl from New York or wherever he's at, right?
Yeah, Connecticut, yeah.
Connecticut. And he brings her back to live on the farm with him.
Uh-huh.
If he had said to, you know, Wilma Dean, my dream is to live on a ranch and just live in a broken down old shack and raise 40 head of cattle, are you in?
Yeah.
I'm not sure Wilma Dean was in for that.
I don't know. I mean, he did at one point say, this is all going to be ours someday. And she just looks out at the oil field and doesn't look thrilled.
But I think you could see money there.
Yeah.
At least.
But just not like the ranch situation.
No.
That I just want to live in a rundown house and
pop out babies.
Yeah.
So they never have that discussion. So,
no.
Okay. Well, I was going to go a different way that because I woke up this morning. I so did not like that movie. And we'll get to our ratings and we'll hear. But because, you know, the whole thing was, are they going to have sex or not? That was the whole.
That was a whole movie.
That was a whole movie. And everything falls out of that. And there was just like nothing to hold anything together. And so I woke up this morning thinking about the scene in the movie where the three guys are sitting in the movie theater. And we were trying to figure it out if it was at their school or if they had gone to the cinema.
Uh-huh.
And two of the guys are smoking a cigarette around Warren Beatty. He's not smoking because he's got to keep in shape. Or he's had a bad run-in recently and had to go under the Billy Rubin lights and get iron shots from Dr. Smiley and the disapproving nurse. Anyway, and so they're smoking a cigarette. But as they're doing it, they're watching a silent movie. And when I woke up this morning, I said, I felt as if I was watching a silent movie when I watched this movie. Because I could not understand what was going on. And when you watch a silent movie, there's all these like over-exaggerated facial expressions, over-exaggerated physical reactions to things. And at the time, like maybe in 1925, you saw that and you'd go, oh, she's very scared, or oh, she's very upset, or oh, she's sad. But when I watch a silent movie today, I just go, what the heck is going on? It's like watching a mime. You know, I don't know what's going on. And that was the same with watching this movie, which was made in 1961, I was like, I feel like I'm watching a movie from another culture. That it was that incomprehensible to me. And so to even try to have a discussion about this movie, I found the movie incomprehensible.
There were so many moments where I was like, wait, why is this thing happening? Or what? Now they're doing this thing? Yeah.
Yes, so many moments like that.
Really was. It was.
Yeah. I mean, we could just go one, you know.
We could talk about so many moments that's
the
true.
Whole movie was a moment like, why is that person doing that? Why is that father doing that? Why is that mother doing that? Why is the brother doing that to his sister? Why is she doing that?
And does she know that he slept with Juanita? And so she's upset about that, or she's upset because he broke up with her. And so she's crying over the Wordsworth poem in class. And then she has a total breakdown. And does she know? Does she not know? What did he tell her? What's the conversation that they had? Who knows what?
The movie was totally incomprehensible. And so we can't really talk about the movie.
Yeah.
And so who was it for? I have no idea.
Because it was clearly well received at the time. So what were people seeing in it at the time?
And so I try to think, okay, 61. It's a little bit before the sexual revolution. Mm-hmm. And so was there
and it's
this
kind
like
of the blowback
unbelievable
against? Yeah,
boiling point? Like it was a pressure cooker of sexual repression?
Yeah, because it's, you know, it's set in the 20s, but it's probably then supposed to be, you know, all the kids who grew up in the late 50s that recognize like the same social mores.
Well, they were wearing
50s mores.
Hairstyles.
Yeah, it was very anachronistic. But, you know, that it's, oh, it's set in the 20s, but like look at how prescient it is today. Like if you have a movie about the 70s or something and they're like, oh, look, we're doing the same thing as we did then. Or, you know, is that what it was supposed to? I think that's probably what it was supposed to be. You know, oh, look, we're in the same kind of repression. We haven't changed in 40 years. You know, look at the damage that it does to behave in these ways or to have these like social mores and repression. But so that must have been, you know, then it was, you know, maybe it was also at the time, like pushing boundaries in that way then, that there was a movie about sexual tension. And
well, I mean, it was like the opening scene, she's in the car and her skirt is very high up on her legs as he's on top of her. And then she's naked in the bath. And we see several women from the back taking their tops off. Maybe it was super racy for the time.
And so I, yeah. And, but now it's just incomprehensible.
Unwatchable.
It really was like, yeah, if anybody ever had had an actual conversation in this movie that made sense with their characters, none of the rest of it would have happened.
Right. And it, you know, like the range of emotions was akin to American Beauty.
Yeah.
We're emotionally distraught, going to have a breakdown. Angry, angry, angry. Now we're emotionally distraught, going to have a breakdown. I love you. Angry. It was just that swinging pendulum.
Yeah, it really was.
Which was American Beauty as well. It was just, you know, ridiculous writing, ridiculous acting. I mean, having watched Moonlight where you actually cared about a character.
And
it was just so beautiful. I mean, even the side characters who were just briefly in the movie.
And every character had so much dimension.
So well defined so quickly that you cared about them so deeply. And these ones were so poorly defined or so two-dimensionally defined that you did not care for a single one in there. Which brings it, maybe we're going to have to wrap this up.
Yeah.
I think we just got to wrap it up.
So yeah, I don't really have a lot to say about
we
it.
We should pitch a car.
It really is just...
And then star by far and best line,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because it really was like, oh, here's how toxic their parents are.
And so, you know, in terms of our like liminality, I would say that both of them went into the liminal space of becoming.
Yeah.
And they let outside forces press down upon them. And so they did not pass through. And they couldn't retreat, and so they just came apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So that's what I would say, is that their unwillingness to embrace their own liminality and to let other people influence it cause a complete implosion of their selfhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then at the end, they're just resigned to being unhappy for the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
They're just like, oh, I don't think about happiness anymore. You know, whatever. I got this kid and this wife and this ranch.
And let me kiss her, so tell her I love her. And she's like, I'll marry him because I guess I love him.
Why? Yeah.
So, but.
And again, I don't know why this is on my brain, but now I'm going to have a book shout out. If you want like a much better version of this story, read Jane Austen's Persuasion. Yeah. That's what it's about. And it's way better.
Yeah.
So read Persuasion instead, or watch the film version of it.
Yeah.
With a cutie pie from, what is her name? Sally. She was in the fish movie from last year. The Shape of Water. She's in The Shape of Water, and she was in that movie Poppy. She was Poppy in that other movie. Anyway, she's in the film version
Happy
of Persuasion. Yes, Happy Go Lucky. That's right. Yeah. She's in the film version of Persuasion, and Persuasion is the much better version of this story. Of letting outside forces make decisions for you and then regretting that decision. And then not just being like, oh, I'm going to be unhappy forever, even though I have all these good things going for me.
Okay.
Anyway, so there were some cars in this movie.
There
was a lot of bad activity happening in cars in this movie. Cars were a menace in this movie. So can you tell us about cars that aren't a menace?
Well, I'd like to pitch a car to the anarcho-syndicalist.
Non-menacing cars. A car the anarcho-syndicalist can just drive around without...
It is absolutely
going
non-menacing.
Going through insane potholes.
Absolutely non-menacing. This would be the 1961, because this movie was made in 61.
Oh, okay.
The 1961 Saab 9-5. A 7-seat, two-door station wagon.
Wow, okay.
Packing those people in. A 3-cylinder, 2-stroke, 840cc. About a mid-sized motorcycle engine.
Okay.
Running this thing.
All right.
So you can imagine how it sounds. It's a 2-stroke, you know. And we'll get a sound effect to actually have a 2-stroke motor.
I prefer yours, a click and clack style.
Yeah,
just do it for
I like
us.
That too. So a couple of things about them. They made them for a lot of years, 57 to 78. They had different versions, 9.3, 9.5, 9.6. And the 9.6 was only a 5-passenger. They got rid of the rear-facing back seat that you access through the hatch. But I think the anarcho-syndicalist is going to need that rear-facing when he's gathering the workers to go travel. It has something called a freewheeling handle. And so if you're going downhill in this car, because it has a 2-stroke engine, that 2-stroke engine is fighting. It's almost engine braking. So you push this pedal on the firewall, and it just releases the transmission and you just coast in neutral down the hill, which I absolutely love. I mean,
that's great.
How safe is that?
Just coasting in neutral down the hill.
Just going down that hill at 60 miles an hour. It has a few other features because, as you know, like the most important thing for colleges for me is what their mascot is. The most important things for cars is how they look. And one of the key features of a car that I've always wanted to own but I never have is rear view mirror on the dash.
Oh,
some cars
okay.
have them on the dash.
Huh.
And mostly sports cars, you know, because the top comes down and they don't want the mirror up there or whatever. And so a lot of sports cars have the rear view mirror on the dash. This is not a sports car, but it has the rear view mirror on the dash.
Okay.
Which I absolutely love. And so you can get one of these in good condition for about $9,000, in fair condition for about $5,000. So you can get one of these fairly cheap.
Hmm.
And I imagine they are ridiculously fuel efficient. 3-cylinder engine that's a 2-stroke. You know, smokes a ton. Just probably makes a cloud of smoke. Neighbors aren't going to be happy, but I am, and I think you are as well. So, anarcho-syndicalist, seriously consider the 61 Saab. So you'll have to go, and sad news about the Saab. When I was researching it, the Saab Museum has closed in Sweden.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they closed in 2012, and they sold their collection.
No.
Yes.
To Jay Leno.
Probably Jay Leno.
Bought them all.
He probably did. And there was another article about a guy selling his Saab to Jay Leno because Jay had always wanted one of these Saabs. And so Jay bought it sight unseen.
Oh, wow. I was listening to another podcast the other day and it's a quiz show. And they quiz people on something they say that they're an expert on that's outside of their field of work. And somebody got quizzed on classic Mustangs.
Oh.
And then they always bring on an expert who analyzes their responses to the hardest questions. And the guy they brought on to be the expert runs the Museum of the Automobile or something like that in LA. And they were asking if he ever had any cars from Jay Leno. And he said, not really, because Jay likes to drive his cars. And so they keep a collection that's just, you know, on pedestals and stuff like that. And he's like, he likes to drive his cars. So, but I think he has loaned them cars to the museum in LA before too.
It's one of the things that I do like about Jay Leno. Mm-hmm.
That he drives the cars.
He does.
Yeah.
You know, like at one point this guy came in with, you know, like a Souza, Hispana Souza, which are like these rare cars from the 30s and 40s. And so this is like a $5 million car. And Jay Leno just takes it out on the road. And when you watch the YouTube video of it, the comments below are, you can see the guy having a heart attack as Jay's driving. You know, but I like it. He just takes them out and drives them.
Yeah.
As they should be.
They're not just meant to be sitting in your garage
till
you have them.
No.
Yeah.
They're meant to be driven.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, that's my car for the anarcho-syndicalist.
All right. Anarcho-syndicalist. Okay. And
Star by Far? I have a Star by Far.
Do you have a Star by Far?
Yeah. This movie was so bleak. My Star by Far, and this goes out to all the people who maybe saw it in the theater,
okay,
is Phyllis Diller.
That was a good Star by Far.
She is the comedian in the vaudeville show that they see in New York City. So she has one line about the people jumping out of the windows for the stock market crash.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just fun to see Phyllis Diller,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of a trailblazing woman. And there she is in this movie. And so not a good line, not a good role, but in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. So she's the only one that had an eye in this movie.
Yeah, this was a rough movie for Star by Far. I mean, yeah, even Dr. Smiley, the doctor who gets tipped $10,000, gave terrible advice. He can't be the Star by Far. He gave terrible advice. The therapist, terrible therapist, constantly mentioning her trigger as she walks out the door. It's a terrible therapy. Oh, remember that boy that caused you to have the mental breakdown? Have you heard from him lately? Oh, our session's over. Bye.
All right. You've been here 2.5 years. Great work and good luck. And when you go out there, are you going to go see that boy that caused you to have a breakdown?
Literally, she's
let me
in
know,
the
right.
doorway. terrible therapist. So I think my star by far is going to have to be his Yale College roommate. Who has like two lines. But we're in the midst of this cheating scandal of all these celebrities and rich people buying their kids into college, which I think is a great story because it's just so representative of exactly what happened in this movie and what happens across America, that rich parents buy their children into college. Really? And then the blame goes on to the students who work hard and affirmative action around students of color and women and other things. They get all the blame for not deserving to be in those places. So I think it's a great story because it shows really the rotten core of all of those things. So the college roommate who's clearly working away in his little glasses, he clearly worked hard to get into Yale. That's my story about him, that he worked hard to get into Yale. He's from the same Italian neighborhood as the guy's girlfriend in New Haven, worked his way in, and then here's this guy who doesn't even want to be there, whose dad bought him in, who's just failing his way out and taking somebody else's spot who really wanted to be there and to work hard. So his gentle chiding of his roommate, of Warren Beatty, he's my star by far.
Okay. That's how bleak this movie is.
That's how bleak it was.
All right.
And then you teased... No. Oh, no.
No best lines.
No best lines.
There is not a single good line in this movie.
No, there is not a good line. I didn't write down a single line here.
No, not a single one.
The only thing I wrote down was the cake eaters, which is my new favorite word, favorite term for the rich people.
Yeah, there's a lot of cake eaters that are unhappy right now because they've been busted for mm-hmm. buying their kids into college.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are the cake eaters indeed.
That
so
was it.
We're going to rate this movie.
But you were teasing a
new segment.
A new segment,
right?
Yeah.
Which is going to come because we're going to do what I watched before.
Uh-huh.
And then we're going to do the new segment.
Okay.
So we're going to do
what did I watch before?
I've been watching a Netflix series called Losers. And this is about sports people that have lost on a grand scale. Either they've lost in the arena or they've lost because they've failed to make adjustments. It's like Surya Bonaly, the French skater, who just would not do all the goofy, artistic interpretations.
Huh. Okay.
But she was ridiculously talented. And so they would show, she did 10 triple jumps and 5 combinations.
Yeah.
And the winner did 5 triple jumps and 2 combinations. Mm-hmm. So she did like twice as much. But because she didn't float around and move her arms and jazz hands, they would just... And because she was black, and then they would code all this language. She's an exotic skater.
Oh.
And they would say all this stuff, and so then they picked apart. And she just wouldn't
change.
She's
a very articulate skater.
Yeah, she just wouldn't change. And she was just like, no, I'm not going to do that. And so she ended up never getting an Olympic medal, never winning a world championship. She ended up really bitter in the end.
Wow.
And she was just like, I wasn't going to change, and they wouldn't accept me. And so it was kind of a great story. And then the other one was about a guy who ran the marathon across the desert, Marathon des Sables, right? And he got lost. And it's this whole story about him. And it's just crazy stories. But it had nothing to do with this movie. So that's what I watched.
Well, I came home from work and I was tired and I just wanted to watch something nice before I went to bed. So Netflix recently added Legally Blonde to their round of good movies that they're putting up there. So before I watched this a couple days ago, I watched Legally Blonde, which is a movie about a woman who initially makes a bunch of decisions around a man that she thinks is her entire future. And then she realizes that she actually has ambitions of her own and that she's really good at it. And it's a very silly movie, and the entire premise is crazy that she gets to take over the case and win it because the one woman doesn't know that you shouldn't wash a perm immediately afterwards. It's a very flimsy plot, but it is the story of a woman who realizes that if she doesn't get this man, it's okay, because she comes to realize she is worth it. She's worth something. She's good at a lot of things. She's also somebody who's like a blonde, she kind of looks like she's a blonde sorority girl, but the entire movie she treats absolutely everybody else with total respect, even when they don't treat her that way, because they dismiss her because of what she looks like and how she behaves. So it's really just a story of a woman realizing her own ambitions and getting it all together and succeeding, and it's just a really nice movie about that. And so it was I think somewhat colored then my watching of this movie, because I was like, "What, Wilma Dean, all you have in your life is your shrine to your high school boyfriend? Like, nothing else going on." So, there, go to law school at Yale.
Okay, so rate this movie, and then I'll do the new segment.
Are you going to rate it while you're going to rate it and then do the next new segment?
Yep.
So I found very little redeeming about this movie. It was fairly offensive to me too. There was so much that was offensive. Like, not that there are movies that I just didn't like, and so I rated them higher because they were, I didn't really like them, but I didn't find them to be like on the 1 to 5 scale of offensive movies, and I found this one to be offensive. So the only really redeeming things were the belly flop and all the pratfalls. So for the unintentional humor of the physical comedy of this, I gave it 1.5 KBs.
Oh, snap!
I did not like this movie.
Okay.
It was unwatchable almost.
It was almost unwatchable. And so I gave this movie, because I found this movie offensive. I found it offensive at minute number 2.
Yeah.
At minute number 2, I was like, I don't know if I can watch this movie. And it never got better. It was an endeavor. It was an effort of will to make it through this movie. And so I gave this movie 4 KB. Because it brings us to this our new segment. Because number 1... I think I disliked American Beauty more, because I could maybe scoff off some of the attitudes of this movie and saying, oh, well, that was 1961. Mm-hmm.
But 1999.
Can't do that for 1999. And so that's why I found American Beauty more offensive than this one.
Mm-hmm. I did as well. I rated this one 0.5 higher.
Right.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's like a new scale, but it brings us to our new segment. Which would you rather?
Ooh.
Would you rather watch this movie or Mr. Holland's Opus? This is going to be like the new over-under for hate.
Oh, I love this. Okay.
Like, if you hate a movie, you have to be more willing to watch Mr. Holland's Opus than this movie. That's it. That's the, like, the line. It's a black and white issue. You hate it or you don't. And you can say, I would rather watch Mr. Holland's Opus. That means... you hated this movie. And if you say, I would rather watch this.
Okay. So this is your question. So it's always going to be compared to Mr. Holland's Opus.
Yep. Like, if you say, I hated this movie, I say, my question is going to be, would you rather watch this or Mr. Holland's Opus? And if you say, I would rather watch this, then you didn't hate it.
I'm going to say I would rather watch Mr. Holland's Opus.
Yes, I would watch Mr. Holland's Opus.
I think it's partially because now it's been a couple months since we watched Mr. Holland's Opus. So with the length of time it's been since I watched that movie. But at least, like, the music was slightly better. Not his opus, but the other music. I would rather watch Richard Dreyfuss hand sign Beautiful Boy to his son than watch this movie.
Absolutely.
The son was this. I still maintain the son was a straight up hottie and a great kid. The mom, there were redeeming, I will just broad scale, redeeming characters in Mr. Holland's Opus. Yeah. There were nice people in that movie.
There were.
The mayor, I don't want to spend time with anybody in this movie.
Absolutely.
No one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mr. Holland's Opus? Yes.
Yeah.
There are people I would spend time with.
Yep. Okay, so that's our new segment. And so,
wow. So, yeah, we hated this movie because we would rather watch Mr. Holland's Opus.
We would both rather watch Mr. Holland's Opus than this movie. That's how much we hated this movie. And that's our new segment.
I love it.
Which would you rather?
Which would you rather?
All right. Well, that's kind of close us out. We have, you know, as always, Sustainabutter, our only sponsor. So.
Thank you, Sustainabutter. We know you don't listen, but we love that you actually sponsor us.
And listening to the soundtrack of this movie, both of us said, Kevin MacLeod would have killed this
soundtrack.
He would
have done such a good job. Yeah. So much better on this.
Way better.
There wouldn't have been sexy saxophone during the suicide attempt.
There would not have been. There would not have been strip club night train saxophone during the father's suicide.
Anyway,
Kevin MacLeod, thank you for the music you've given us for this podcast.
You would never have made those musical decisions.
No.
You are way beyond that. We love it.
Yeah. Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com. K, Okay.
So again, if you did, we've hated on this movie unrelentingly. We really said that pratfalls were the only redeeming quality of it. So if you did like this movie, I do honestly want to hear why. Yeah. If you did really like Love, Simon, I didn't. I would rather watch Love, Simon than Mr. Holland's Opus. So I didn't hate Love, Simon as much. I don't. I wouldn't say that I hated Love, Simon. I hated Simon. If you liked either of these movies, I really honestly want to hear why.
We do, both of us.
We're not setting you up for anything. We just want to hear your perspective.
Yeah, we're not going to call you names if you write in and say I liked it.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay. And then next week, episode 17.
Episode 17 can only go up from here. We're going to be watching
Rebel Without a Cause.
Also starring Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood.
Yes.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Guys, go watch West Side Story. The weird whitewashing of West Side Story where Natalie Wood plays a Puerto Rican.
Yeah.
Less offensive than this.
Way, way less. All right.
Join us then for Rebel Without a Cause. Thanks for talking nonsense.
Thanks for talking nonsense.